Future Friday.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Future Friday. I am your host, Hamish Hallett, and I'm with John Beasy. I'm talking about another subject of the future. And this time we're going to be looking into the media, but more specifically news media, and how that's going to be improving in terms of the future. So, John, how do you feel about news media and how it's progressing more or less into the future? Like, how is it kind of affecting our kind of broader implications of society? Like, how do you feel like news media will become in the future, would you say?
That's a difficult question, considering just how much the media has changed. The way in which we interact with cultural media has certainly changed a lot. We have more of a socioludic culture, one where we definitely have to make things fun and interactive and engaging. And that definitely creates a different kind of experience than what we've seen previously.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it's more like you have to do stuff which is like clickbaity as well, you know? So the fact that our media has now gone from sort of traditional newspaper to now more like online stuff, and you have to now, and it's more, even the attention spans of individuals has kind of grown less and less. No idea why though. I don't know if you maybe know the reasoning behind why our attention spans have gone lower and lower. Maybe it's because of technology, but yeah, it's the fact that now with the news media situation, it's like, yeah, it's all about clicks now. It's all about trying to grab that attention headline, and then that's how you get your story really. But maybe, I don't know, maybe that's been all the time now, but maybe it's because, you know, now it's more online, it's more apparent. I don't know. How do you feel about that? I don't know.
I'd say it's definitely, that incentive to get more clicks is just an evolution of the incentive to get more viewers.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you started getting 24-hour corporate news media in the 80s, then, well, the media was like, okay, well, we got to talk about something for all the day. So what's going to get us people to watch our programming so we can show ads to make money?
Of course.
And that incentive of getting more people to get more ads, that's been there for 30 years. It's only now that once we move it onto the internet that it becomes a much more fast paced.
Absolutely. And it's way more widespread as well. The fact is newspapers have to kind of go out towards these big companies and be like, hey, could you put like an ad on to like your certain newspaper and whatnot? Mm-hmm. And this usually gets printed every single day. Whereas now, because it's online, people can view it so interactively all the time, pretty much. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have to go and like buy a newspaper and then see the ad. It's pretty much visually, everyone now owns just like a smartphone. It's like, if you don't own a smartphone, you're kind of not as connected with the world, pretty much. And yeah, definitely the fact that, you know, ads are now way more apparent in terms of like all the time, but yeah.
Well, it's the primary driver, because before, when you had, you know, a cable subscription or you bought a newspaper, they could make a profit off of the physical newspaper. They could make money off of your subscription. Now it's either you have to pay to, you know, lots of media are trying to create new models. You either have to create, you have to pay, or you can do Patreon, but a lot of it's either get it exclusive. They get a lot of their funding almost exclusively from advertising now.
Yeah, that's true actually. And now newspapers, actually speaking about sort of paid subscriptions, a lot of these big newspapers are now wanting, you know, subscriptions now, I think, which is quite interesting. I don't know why they've kind of switched that kind of motto now. I think it's maybe because newspapers aren't as making as much money, so they have to find a way now of trying to like incorporate subscriptions, I think. But also, yeah, I think going off your point, yeah, definitely, I think ads are part of that. But why has newspapers really gone towards like subscriptions? Maybe because they lose money, or is there like another reason? Maybe, I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I mean, they've definitely experimented with subscription models. It's definitely not the best. They definitely haven't been doing very well. I think it's the economics of it have changed, where they are not able to make as much money to support as much of the staff as they need, and they keep going about it in a 20th century mindset. They still keep thinking, you know, clicks is clicks, more clicks are good. It doesn't matter what you click on, just as long as you're getting them clicks.
Mm, that's true, actually. Yeah, and it's the fact that it's not even how long you. It's like someone could read a piece for not even less than 30 seconds, for example, and they're already bored and they're off, and they're like, oh, bad newspaper, and then would never go onto that newspaper site ever again. So it's like, and the fact is, going off, it's like the fact that now they're only measuring upon the clicks, it's not enough to see like how well they're doing as a newspaper, because you know, you can only see it from subscriptions, you can see it over how many page views, for example. So it's always very difficult to see like how well these places are doing.
Well, it creates a real perverse incentive. It incentivizes people to create, you know, it's quantity over quality. Mm. It incentivizes a lot of resharing.
Yes.
A lot of just re-reporting. And it just makes it difficult to incentivize proper quality media. And it's these kinds of incentives, I think, these perverse incentives that force these profit-driven media corporations to abandon their public mandate to create an informed democratic citizenry.
Mm.
And now that they're not able to perform that role, I think that's a lot of the reason why we see people become distrustful of the media. They're not performing the role they were once assigned. And while the media does have these perverse incentives, it's definitely it makes it harder for people to, it just makes disinformation a lot easier.
Exactly. And it's always kind of, the media is no longer just giving you all the facts and giving you all the information. They're just selling it just to profit out of it. And it's like, it doesn't even matter how true the story is. They're just going to put it out there. And it doesn't matter. They don't check the facts. They don't check all that kind of situations.
Well, it's all either to make profit or to manufacture consent.
Absolutely. And I think I was actually going to say like one very interesting comment. So I read a piece from Margaret Colmer in her piece Information Technology and Politics. Now this was interesting back in 1994. This was, and I know this is quite a prehistoric article. Okay, it's not, but like, you know what I mean, it's quite old. But it's very interesting when she was saying the fact that information technology has not increased political participation. However, this is in 1994 and things like that, but also said the fact that so much more information has become online, so much stuff has been published. She said a very interesting comment to say, volumes of garbage has been generated in the public discourse. And she said that back in 1994. So I feel like that kind of, for me, when I saw that comment and that was saying in 1994, it's like she's kind of predicting the future and kind of predicting what's happening now, because that's what I kind of feel a little bit. It's like, I see most new stuff now on Facebook. I sometimes share my stuff through not just going on Facebook and then share it, because I actually look into the articles and think, okay, that article isn't from 2009 or all that stuff, you know, because I find some people on Facebook share stuff and it's like, come on, it's so out of date, you know? But that's the issue. I think even though news media has over this time has grown hugely, it's gone, I think it has sometimes generated too much garbage. So it's like, how do we kind of find a way to stop, like how what you said, because we've gone too much of producing we're producing too much quantity over quality. It's like, how do we change that is the biggest question.
I don't think it's not necessarily that we need to stop creating garbage. I think what we'd rather want is these algorithms to show us things that aren't garbage.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it is a lot, again, Facebook, Twitter, they're all driven by these incentives get the clicks.
Completely.
So they're just as, you know, they're just as complicit in this as other news sites. They're incentivized to get anything out there that will get your attention, that keep you on the platform so they can continue showing you ads. And the things that get people to stay are things that enrage them, the things that irritate them. It doesn't matter if it's true, but Facebook needs to make money, so they'll show you whatever it takes to keep you obsessively scrolling through your newsfeed.
Absolutely. And it's also developing those kind of echo chambers as well, which is even more scarier. So for me, this wasn't recent, but in December 2019, I think I might have mentioned this on the program, but like the UK general election happened, and it was just so funny to look at my Facebook and see all my, like, I wouldn't say friends, but like left-wing friends who are on Facebook, for example, showing all this stuff about Jeremy Corbyn doing this, how Boris Johnson's really bad, he's racist, all this kind of stuff, which I'm not, don't get me wrong, like, okay, through these articles, when I read, I was like, okay, they have a good point, but it's always had that bias and stuff. And it's all these little echo chambers which were created, and all those Labour supporters thought everyone's, oh, Jeremy Corbyn's definitely going to win and stuff like that. And then as soon as this shock result happened where Boris Johnson won a huge majority, everyone's like, oh my God, this is so weird. But it's like, well, hold on, not every single person believe, like, agrees with the same ideas. And that's what's really worrying for me. It's the fact that Facebook and all these kind of sharing, all these clicks are creating, and all these algorithms are changing and creating us to become, you know, putting us in these little groups and not making us expand our minds and engaging with different opinions. And that, as a result, is creating a lot more polarization within our political world and a lot of, you know, discontent, because the fact that we just, we can't agree with each other because we're so isolated in these sort of echo chambers. So it's like Facebook, I think, is definitely, and all these social media companies are in their fault, because it's the fact that you've created us to be within these certain groups. And the fact is, technology is supposed to connect with more people, not create these sort of echo chambers. So it's like, yeah, it's interesting.
Well, it is connecting you with more people. It's just connecting you with more of the same people.
Yeah. But it's like, how do you change it? You know, it's like, I understand that Facebook needs an incentive, but it's the wrong incentive. It's the profit incentive. It's the way of clicks. It's the way of, you know, sharing data and holding data and trying to connect with people which are similar to you. But at the same time, you know, that then creates that very narrow-mindedness as well, and doesn't, you know, and that's not, and I don't think that's good. And also, yeah, in that sense, it's pretty dodgy to have as a society. If you're only with people that are, agree with you all the time, and you're not exposed to an outside opinion, it, then you then you, you're then not used to it, and then you could be like, oh my God, and then it happens where you create this council culture potentially. I mean I wouldn't say like the fact that echo chambers has then directly led to the council culture, but you know what I mean, it's like the fact that we've been so obsessed with talking to people that we agree with, as soon as a different opinion comes in, we're like, oh, that's a really bad opinion, we're gonna cancel it and, you know, block him off Facebook, you know. So it's like doing that as well. So it's like talking about counter culture as well. It's kind of, that sort of incorporates it, which is pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I feel like that's my issue with, you know, with the press media right now. It's the fact that now we're kind of sharing stuff on Facebook without knowing, like, not even knowing the, like, the bias behind it either, because Facebook is only caring about the likes, the sharing and stuff like that. And the fact that, you know, you're friends with people who have the same sort of ideas, it's kind of narrow-minding your kind of political stream. And the thing is, we're picking up media sources as well that only back up our views as well. So I feel like it's a way that there needs to be some sort of form of change that is. But like, yeah, I don't know, how do we kind of incorporate that? Like, what do we do?
Well, there's lots that we can, for one, stop getting our news from Facebook.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the reasons why RSS is, you know, back on the rise.
What's that? I've never heard of that.
RSS is really simple syndication. It's an old protocol that a lot of websites use that essentially create a standardized way to just receive information in the order they're presented in. So a lot of news sites will either have all their programming or their different individual sections as their own independent feeds. And so you can use a program called an RSS reader to subscribe to these feeds. And so, say for example, my Canada folder has CBC New Brunswick, CBC Nova Scotia, CBC BC, National Post, Beaverton, because it's fun, Policy Options, you know, all these different news sites all filtered in, and it's not filtered by an algorithm. I choose what sites I want to see, and then it just shows me everything they publish in chronological order. And then depending on what kind of platform you use, you can put in filters to either hide certain things you don't want to see, or you can, you know, accentuate certain things to filter out things you want to see in particular if you want to research something. One platform, Feedly, is now incorporating an AI in their platform. So rather, it's still, that's, I think, as a good way to go about it, where it's primarily still driven by the user. You choose which feeds you want to subscribe to, and then the AI is something complementary to help show you other things.
Ah, that's cool. Yeah.
And so it allows you to see, you know, if you don't want to see something from Fox, don't subscribe to Fox. But if you want, but you know, I'll subscribe to the American Conservative just so I can see something a little different in my feed.
Mm, that's really clever, actually. Yeah, I feel that. Yeah, as like two like-minded individuals, we would rather have, you know, a variety of different sources and things like that, so that if we as a consumer is able to be like, okay, I want to pick a left-wing source or right, even having those, though the left and right wing is very difficult to define what that is, but let's say like, yeah, you have like Fox and CNN, you know, you want to choose like, yeah, you want to choose those two kind of sources, you're going to have to do two different things and stuff. But I do kind of want to critique you though about that. If we're giving a lot of power to consumers, will they just, although, okay, because you did say the whole AI kind of complements it, but sometimes with, what if the algorithm goes wrong? So for example, let's say the consumer picks all these, the things they like, but then the algorithm doesn't complement and show different things. It shows the exact same things. Is that sort of reinforcing the problem, or is there still a lack of information about that?
Well, the prime, well, I don't use Feedly because their AI is behind their paywall. But the big thing is that it's still primarily the feeds you're subscribed to are still things you chose.
Okay.
And so if it just shows you the same, because that's a fault with RSS is, now some readers are better at this, but they can filter articles that are the same.
Mm.
And that, you know, if, say, I don't know, there's a ship sinks off the coast of Nova Scotia, CBC Nova Scotia will publish that, but so will CBC Canada. And so you can get some, you know, the same kind of articles twice over. And so if you feel like you're just getting the same kind of stuff, well, then it's not really doing what you want. But the whole thing is that it's still driven by you. If you want to find something different, you go out and do it. And it's just like how it was before. But back, you know, back when you had to turn on the channel or buy a newspaper, you still had to choose which paper you bought, what you chose, which sections you read.
Mm. Okay, that's clever. So it's like, yeah, you kind of, it's given the power to the consumer to kind of change. If they're getting bored by hearing the same sort of opinion, they would then change it to go and, you know, view a different one, in a sense.
Because I know if I subscribe to, because the thing is that different publications will always publish at different frequencies.
Mm.
So you can have one like I want to subscribe to Reuters on my RSS.
Yeah.
They publish like 1,400 articles a week.
Oh yeah, they do, yeah.
And so it's just like I can't subscribe to much. Reuters because if I wanted to just subscribe to their American news, I would like 4 out of 5 articles I'm going to get in my feed are going to be Reuters articles.
Yeah,
just because they publish so much more than everyone
else. They publish a lot. Yeah. Could you even find does this program, is it able to kind of limit the amount of stuff they like you want in terms of publish? So let's say you want to be subscribed to company, but you're saying, okay, I want 100 articles from this company and I want 100 articles from another newspaper. Could they do that, or is it still,
I think that would be something that would be coming out later in terms of, I think that'd be something that the AI would do just to see what kind of things you read, to show you that, to help filter it. But right now it's still largely limited to, for example, also, I subscribe to TechCrunch and Engadget for some technology stuff.
Okay.
But they post a lot of, you know, this startup's getting, you know, just got Series B funding. This startup just got, you know, $20 billion in venture capital. I don't care about startups getting venture capital. Mm. So I just tell it, if there's any titles that say Series A, B, or C, says got, dropped, earned, whatever, or says VC or venture capital, just filters it out.
Okay, cool.
But it's still driven by what I choose to see. It's not done for me without my consent. Or even, there's nothing wrong with an algorithm, just so long as it shows you what its criteria are and allows you to manually adjust it.
Yeah.
Because once you have control over the algorithm and you understand why it's showing you things, then people have a much different relationship with it. What people don't like is when they don't understand why it's doing these things and when it just does something for them without their understanding.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, actually. It's the fact that it's just recently I've now found out the fact if I go on, let's say I go on to just a random site, website, doesn't matter what industry it is, if it's news, if it's travel, fashion, whatever, right? And the fact that I see then afterwards on my Instagram random ads from similar fashion companies, at first I was like, what the hell? That's super weird. I've just went, and then someone told me it. I was like, right, that's super, super weird. But then now the thing is, maybe I'm being wrong here, but I feel like more people are trying to realize this is going on, but maybe they're not. Especially, you know, it's the fact, like, trying to speak to kind of, not to be like ages here, but like even older people, I don't think they understand the fact, like, you know, if you use your thumb, for example, on a mobile phone, or let's say you search something online and then it comes up with different ads and stuff, they're like, oh, why do I have all these random ads? It's like, they don't completely understand what's the whole technological behind it. And that's what's super scary, because, you know, I think there's a generation now that is growing older and older and older, but they do not live within time right now, which is so technologically advanced. It's like, and that's quite a bit of an issue, because, you know, I hear cases where, you know, old people are getting kind of scammed, for example, online, and it's pretty worrying, because, and again, this is not trying to be ageist, but it's like they're more vulnerable to kind of hear these hackers and stuff like that. So I think it's like that, again, it's kind of pretty difficult. But yeah, I went on such a tangent there, but like I'll definitely say, like, I think that's, yeah, just going back to your point, about press media and stuff, I think it's an interesting way of just having like algorithms that can decide what you want to listen to or what you want to read, and then the algorithm to support you, not to like directly on a similar path, actually directly a different path. But yeah,
no, an interesting thing is a new platform coming out from one of the founders of Wikipedia,
yes,
called WT Social.
Mm.
And so how this works is it's right now, I believe it's still invite only. You can like go on the website, search WT Social, and put in your email if you want to, like, you know, test it.
Okay.
And so how it works is it's supposed to be a social news site that operates under a largely same kind of business model as Wikipedia and has a lot of the same features. So it's going to be donation-based. It's donation-driven. There's no ads. There's no algorithm. Everything's shown to you in chronological order. There's no upvote or downvote. I don't think you can even comment. But it is formatted like Wikipedia. So all the news articles are wiki articles.
Right.
Which means everybody has editorial power. Which will be interesting to see how it works. Because for the most part, people trust Wikipedia as a fairly, as a decent and credible source.
Of course.
So if we can trust giving everyone editorial power for Wikipedia, we can see how it might work for news. It'll be an interesting experiment.
Oh yeah, because I can imagine someone editing some story and creating this false information.
People edit it back.
Oh yeah, and edit it back and forth and back and forth. When you mentioned about the whole editing things, so I was like in my head like, oh no, this doesn't sound, for me, from and the outside perspective, like a theoretical point of view, I think this sounds, I think a bad thing to happen, like a bomb about to go off, I think.
But wasn't it the same thing people were saying about Wikipedia?
Yeah, but I feel like that's the thing. I don't know. Actually, that's a good point.
Because Wikipedia does have some news functions in it.
Mm.
And it largely operates in the same kind of, you know, they have their style guide. There are, you know, general kind of some restrictions on who can edit on Wikipedia. It's not like, one, you need to make an account, and then if you just, you know, abuse it or whatever, you can be banned or whatever.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But then that raises a lot of questions just about how, you know, who gets, you know, is it going to be just as easy to get on there?
Yeah.
Because once you start having it, whoever has editorial control has, you know, a lot of control over these platforms.
Absolutely. But I feel like if Wikipedia does the same way, so with this new platform, which Wikipedia is going to publish, if they act like the same way they do with Wikipedia, where they allow only certain people to edit it, that you have to have an account, for example, and you can't abuse it, then I think the system will work. However, if you give everyone, regardless if they have an account or not, the ability to just edit, that I think will cause problems, I think.
Yeah, no, it's not like, you know? That.
Yeah.
You'll need an account. You need to actually be able to edit things. And the other thing is that they're not going to be afraid to take down problematic content.
Ooh. What do you mean by problematic content, though?
Well, that's not their word.
sorry, no. Okay,
that's my word. But yeah, cool. It's the idea is that if they feel like that there's, you know, harmful or hurtful messaging or content on there, because they're not beholden to advertisers and they're not beholden to algorithms, because it's just based on donations, they feel like they can have that kind of integrity to have us, you know, stand up and say like, no, we're not going to tolerate, you know, neo-Nazis on our platform.
Of course, yeah. But then it's like, because I know we were discussing this a little bit last week and at the end of our podcast last time, about like, you know, how you're saying about how there should be like rights, like technological rights online and things like that, and how I said about freedom of speech and stuff like that. Now, don't get me wrong, I agree with you in the sense that we shouldn't have, you know, people like who are going to try and be abusive and trying to have violence online and things. I agree. But then I do feel I have a slight issue when we have like one company deciding like what's allowed to be published and what's not allowed to be published, because I feel like then there's like a bit of a bias. Don't get me wrong, if Wikipedia was like, let's say there was a clear person, like a clear, like a group of people that were saying, right, I want Barack Obama shot dead and things like that, and all Jews, like certain hateful things, which is very clear, that's online and that shouldn't be there, then fine, take that down. But sometimes when someone says an opinion which, even though it could be controversial, they can back it up, what happens then? Does Wikipedia have the power to then take that down, even though that's a controversial opinion, one could argue, but it's still got, you know, good amount of evidence to back up? What happens then? That's my issue.
Well, I think one thing is it's supposed to be news, not opinions.
Okay.
So it's about a proper framing of news. So it's like, I think a lot of the issue with fake news is when there are events that either don't happen or are misreported.
Of course.
Or events that actually do happen, but the framing is skewed.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's about, you know, if there's something that happens, the idea is that they're trying to make get in such a way that the framing is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
It's not harmful. It's not propagandistic. Okay. The other issue is that because it's operating under the same donations model, if you don't like what they're doing, don't donate.
Hmm.
Like I think that the people have more power over it because it's beholden to its donors, not beholden to advertisers. And there's no perverse incentive where anything that gets, you know, traction is what gets them money. It's being an honest and exercising their role as an appropriate moderator. That's what's going, if they exercise their duties appropriately and properly, that's what's going to get them donations. That's what's going to allow them to continue operating. If they don't, if they abuse or misuse their power,
of course,
no one's going to keep that going.
Yeah, that's very clever. That's a good counterpoint, actually. Because I feel that, yeah, maybe there are these companies who, you know, ban certain people are driven by these mass sort of donation, or like not donations, but like mass ads, you know, backing them up and stuff. But the fact like, yeah, it's the people in general who donate, you know, it's the fact that Wikipedia now has a job to try and mediate between those people. I think that's a fair enough.
Like, I donate to Wikipedia because I think it does a good job. I think the editors do good work.
I agree.
And so if they can do something similar to that, I'm not going to have an issue donating money to that kind of platform if it does good work. If it does bad work, I'm not going to give my money to it.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, yeah, if Wikipedia is going, if it's silencing too many people, or if it's allowing, well, not silencing people, but like, you know what I mean? Like, if it's creating news stories that are too biased or non-biased or not capturing the facts, then yeah, donations will become less and less, and that's fair enough. I do think, I agree in the sense that Wikipedia is, even though we shouldn't use it as like essay sources and stuff like that, I think it is, if you're wanting to just know a little information really quickly, you're just going on Wikipedia and then has it really, which is cool.
You never cite Wikipedia. You cite the sources Wikipedia cites.
Yes, there you go. That's what you do. Yes, to get good A+ essays.
But, I've done that too many times and I should admit.
Really? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I've done it. Maybe I have. Maybe I haven't. But I think it is interesting the fact that Wikipedia is now looking into that. I think it's quite cool. Because when you mentioned it to me, I was like, okay, that seems quite cool. The fact they want to try to join that field and actually produce good news, because Yeah, I do feel that, you know, news right now isn't positive, it isn't great, and I feel like it's always been led by a lot of biases. Even though news is news, obviously it's every single thing that you're going to see has bias, you know, if despite if it's online, if it's technologically been advanced or not, or whatnot. And I think if we look down in the future, I think the news will, like, media, like news media will still be covered by bias. I think, yeah, but at least it's good that Wikipedia is trying to find a way of, you know, standing out from the crowd and be a bit different. So is there any, like, other, you know, because you mentioned Wikipedia doing this, is there other companies doing this, or is it, I don't know if you know.
I'm not sure. This is a separate endeavor by the founder of Wikipedia, so it's not Wikipedia per se that's getting in.
Yeah.
But yeah, other companies I'm familiar with.
Okay.
Whether or not they're doing something as, let's say, positive.
Yeah.
As that.
I mean, Twitter's banned political ads. That's what they've done. So that could be a good move.
Google has as well.
Oh, yes. Has Google done as well? Okay. Yeah. How recent?
And then
was
Facebook
this?
Just says they're just not going to touch, like, they're going to allow political ads. They're just basically not going to, like, really do anything, I believe.
Yeah. That's true, actually. Because
I
feel like
you ban them all or you ban none.
Yeah. It's like Mark Zuckerberg came out saying, I think it was when he was questioned a lot by the congressman. He just came out, they just asked a question about, like, right, what if there's a clear ad saying, I don't know what it was saying, but if he basically got asked a question, would you ban certain ads? He pretty much didn't really answer it. He kind of avoided the question a lot. So that kind of does show the fact that Facebook is still going to be that sort of place where it's going to share its news, which isn't great, I don't think. But yeah, no, it's very interesting in that sense. But yeah, do you have anything else, really?
Well, even if you ban political ads, you can still have, there's going to be ways to get around that.
Yeah,
there's going to be ways to either have political content and not make it overtly political.
Yeah,
or you know, present one thing and it's, you know, has coded messaging or has whatever kind of other values embedded into it that articulate those kinds of ideas. Or it's just, you know, maybe the rule is political parties or whatever can't run their own ads, but anyone else can.
That's true, actually, because I think it was seen in the 2016 US election, a lot of, you know, Republicans and Democrats were using social media as a political tool, sharing different ads, all these kind of things. So it's like the fact now Twitter is now banning these kind of things, it's gonna definitely change elections in the future potentially. I think it does seem, though, that most elections are now going online, less sort of, you know, human-to-human contact. Like, less, I think I see less sort of, from my UK perspective, I see less MPs going towards doors and just knocking on their door and be like, hey, wanted to portray the message. It's more, like, online-based. And, you know, I think even though we still continued using, like, signs to say what the candidate is, which is really bad because it's been used by plastic, so I think that needs to change. But even just to go off your kind of, even though, let's say, Facebook bans certain things like political ads and stuff like that, people can still share stuff and create a bit of a debate about stuff. So I saw something on Twitter, I think it was today or yesterday, I know you haven't seen this video, but it's a really interesting debate about, this is going to sound really random, but it's about a woman reclining her chair back in the airport and in the airplane. I don't know if you've seen this video, and then the guy behind, and then the person behind her was like constantly like hitting the seat, and that was a shared video, and then that created a huge divided debate between two sets of people. One saying like, yeah, the woman is completely fine to resign her to like to go back to put her chair back, and then the other people were like, no, that's wrong and stuff like that. So it's like, yeah, I know it's super random to mention, but it's kind of shows that even if, let's say, Facebook, all these big companies like ban these ads and ban certain, and or like not trying to portray too much news sources, which could be fake news and whatnot, even if a person tries to share a video which shows a situation, like an everyday situation, for example, that's going to create a debate still. So it's interesting. Like, even if we do that, it's kind of, yeah.
There's plenty of ways in which they can get the value messages across without making it overtly.
Yeah,
saying support this candidate, vote for this bill or whatever, but like some abstract, it's kind of like, you know, the same thing about you advertise cars. It's like you talk about how great it is, about adventure, about family. You never talk about the car itself,
of course,
but you always talk about all the things associated with it that you want to associate with that.
Mm.
So, you know, you could easily just upload a meme onto Facebook and call it an ad and start having it circulate as a sponsored content. And if you structure your meme properly, if you use it the right way, then you can make it, or you can have it articulate the message you want to the right people and have it go over everyone else's head.
Yeah.
If they don't know what they're looking for.
Mm. No, it's true. We have been speaking a lot about the negatives of social media and like the negatives of, you know, how Facebook shares maybe false information, things like that. But like, I think there's still kind of a positive now that we're in this technological world. I know this is going to be a little bit of an offshore subject, but like protests, for example. So I feel like social media and online, especially like how we kind of see online news media now, I think let's say people are trying to protest against against like a government which is being really bad or something like that, they can have that voice now and a better tool to kind of use it and portray the message. That's quite good in that sense. So for example, like the Hong Kong protests, for example, they used social media a lot and they've actually helped in terms of raise the issue about showing how China is doing bad and whatnot. And even though there's been a few studies as well conducted about trying to see if social media has improved the aims of protest movements, and some of it's quite unclear because some say yes, some say no. Of course, it depends on the context of it. But what do you think though about social media being used in that context? Surely that's quite a good positive rather than a negative.
Yeah, I mean, like I say about all technology, it's how we use it.
Of course.
There's definitely ways in which it can be used to circumvent state censorship.
Yeah.
It can be used to reinforce state censorship. There's plenty of ways it can be used positively to, you know, create well-informed, connected, empathetic citizens. But it's also a way to manufacture consent, spread fear and misinformation.
Yes.
You know, China. Yeah, you can use Hong Kong as an example for a positive use of social media. But you can also look at China's censorship of Weibo and just, you know, and using that as a means to generate support for the regime and you know, snuff out any opposition.
Of course. Yeah, definitely. Because I was kind of I'd done an essay on the sort of China and the Hong Kong protest, and it's kind of, even though protesters have a way of using social media for that great positive tool and like showcasing a positive message, sometimes states can use social media to actually restrict social media a lot in terms of their power, especially now China's become this sort of digital totalitarian state. We've kind of talked about this subject quite a lot about China, about their use of like cameras, facial recognition, all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of, China has really been using that. And even like Russia, for example, you know, so it's like Russia tries to spread misinformation, for example, you know, to disquash, you know, or create protests, for example, over false information. So that's, again, it's always touching on your point. It's sometimes it's how we use technology and the way it's going to impact in the future is always tricky.
Or we could always say that a group of people protesting isn't always good.
Yeah.
Because what they're protesting about is, you can say that social media can be used to, you know, create a real grassroots movement to create a more democratic participatory system over a more authoritarian closed one. But on the other hand, you know, it could be used to, I don't know, organize fascists and neo-Nazis, people who don't want actual participation by everyone.
Of course. It's also like, you know, touching on your subject, like for example, like Antifa, for example. You know, Antifa kind of uses like Facebook groups, for example, to kind of create these marches. And even because I'm not gonna lie, I've seen videos from like Stephen Crowder, for example, showing Antifa, like showing a individual pretend to be part of Antifa, and basically, I think it was a few members. I don't know where this was. I think this was on a campus in the United States where I think it was a group of Antifa members were waiting for someone to come outside. And these members of Antifa had knives in them and they were going to like probably like intimidate these people. And it's like, and you have those kind of groups and it's kind of like, I agree. It's the fact that it really depends what the protest movement is.
Yeah, I mean, you know? Charlottesville was organized on social media.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how a lot of these right-wing groups operate, is by connecting on, you know, on 4chan, on 8chan, on various Discord servers, all these different websites that allow them to communicate with each other and organize politically.
Yeah.
And then manifest that in actual physical space.
Reddit as well, I think, is would you say Reddit as well?
Depends on where subreddit, but...
Oh, it's okay, fair enough. Because I'm not too sure about like Reddit and in terms of the whole technicalities of it, but I feel like I see sometimes things posted on Reddit as well, which is like... a little bit controversial and stuff like that, and but
it depends on the subreddit you go to. I mean, you can definitely go, you can go to, like, you know, you can go to Our Socialism and it's going to be all socialists, but yeah. You can go on to, you know, Our Cringe or Cringe Anarchy, Tumblr in Action, various different subreddits, and they're all they could have, every subreddit's going to have a political bend to it.
Of course.
Which way that bends is different, but it's not a place for unbiased or objective content.
Of course.
It's better for, I think Reddit's better for anything, for things that are fun and not political or news.
I agree, actually. Yeah. But I just want to just like finish off lastly. It's like, we talked about a lot about news media being, you know, quite biased, for example. And sometimes the fact that if it's on Facebook, if it's online, for example, you're always going to have that bias, and potentially you're going to have, you know, echo chambers and stuff like that. How do we, I know this is going to be such a big, difficult philosophical question, right? To be like, how do we get rid of bias? How do we get rid of all this kind of stuff? How do we finally get neutral news media? That's my question, because as an individual myself, sorry, do you want to go ahead?
Do you want neutrality in the platform as a whole, or do you want neutrality in the individual articles and authors?
Ooh, yeah.
Because I think the former is what's possible. The latter, I think, is a myth.
Yeah, like a new, that's, yeah. I think the individuals being neutral, yes. I think that could happen, yes, I agree. Like the fact that, no.
I think you're not going to get, I don't think you can get, I don't think you can find a published article
that is neutral.
That's going to be neutral.
Okay.
I don't think the people can be neutral. What I think you can do is create a platform that shows you different articles from different perspectives that as a whole together provides nuance and some kind of objectivity.
Okay.
Or approximating objectivity. Mm. But I think actual neutrality and objectivity are myths and don't exist. I don't think we'll ever actually be able to achieve that. I think aspiring to is harmful.
Oh, right. Fair enough. In what sense? Why do you think it's going to be quite harmful?
Because it's trying to aspire to something that's not possible. You're trying to do something futile. And in doing so, I think it's the wrong way to approach it. Once you realize that people, you'll never be able to get rid of any kind of bias that's in a person. People are inherently have their own biases. They can try to minimize them. You can minimize it, but that's all you can do. Minimize bias.
Sure.
You can never eliminate it.
Fair enough. Yeah. Okay.
Present something that, and so presenting something as objective when in reality it's not, mm-hmm. that's what's harmful.
Fair enough. So you kind of feel that maybe having organizations that try and have at least some impartiality, at least.
I don't even know if the news organization itself is what's going to be neutral.
Mm.
I just think it's more about the platform in which how people get their news.
Gotcha. Yeah.
It's fine if, I don't know, the Independent has a bit of a left-wing bend, so long as you're, you know, complementing that with articles from other sources, you can see the same event from different perspectives, rather than try to find one thing that definitively includes all perspectives. Because the other issue is trying to always frame it in terms of there's two sides, there's for and against, and it's always, but it's never always just a fine binary. There's always going to be, there's nuance. There's people who are, you know, who like one thing but don't like the other. There's people who, you know, really like one thing, or there's, you know, there's an issue and only one solution gets discussed and other ones don't because for whatever reason.
I'm the type of person that is always wanting nuance in an argument. I can't pick I'm for this place or I'm against this place. I can't. I don't know if you're the similar, same sort of person. Like, I like for myself, it sounds like a radical centralist, But I'll try and get like, okay, I like these kind of sets of arguments, but I also like those arguments. However, there's, you know, deep underlying issues of these arguments, and then trying to find and create a new opinion. It's very difficult.
Nuance is something we should aspire to.
Yeah.
It's just trying to, but framing that nuance as objectivity.
Yes.
That's where it becomes problematic.
That's fair enough. I think we should leave it there. I think, you know, trying to find nuance in news media is the future of that. So yeah, just want to say thank you again, John. And yeah, stay tuned for next week for another episode of Future Friday. And yeah, have a great day.